is going to fall over now. Welcome back. Right. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Tom, whose home group is Wantage. And Tom, who was the first old-timer you came across, if you remember?
I remember the first alcoholic I met was Irish Ray. The first old-timer, I should imagine, would have been Tommy G.
And the first meeting you ever attended?
First meeting, Sunday night, Liebenrode Road.
Oh, okay. Well, over to you, Tom.
Thank you very much. Hey, my name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Tom.
And a very nervous alcoholic. This is the first convention I've ever spoken at, which I find... that's the first one I've ever spoken at. I was sitting there listening to Miles, who I've heard many times, and it's always very interesting. And I was thinking about my first drink, or my first drunk, and I was working on the Isle of Wight. I was a catering college working on the Isle of Wight during our summer break at the Channel View Hotel Shanklin. Me and a friend of mine, and we finished work there at 8 o'clock, then we worked on Shanklin Pier clearing glasses, and I used to sell Scrumpy, and we got, I think, 10 shillings a night for clearing, plus all the Scrumpy we could drink. And one particular night we nicked a couple of bottles of red wine from the hotel cellar, and went down Shanklin Pier clearing glasses, and at the end of the evening we was mixing red wine and Scrumpy, which I don't recommend. And we picked up a couple of girls, you know, and I was 15 years old and still a virgin, which I suppose is quite unusual nowadays. I don't know, because I've been out of that sort of game for a while. Picked up a couple of girls, and we was running back to our place in a taxi. And the young lady I was with had on this very nice mini dress, pure white, and I threw up over her. And I'd gone into blackout by then. And anyway, when I woke up in the morning, she was still in bed with me. But I hadn't lost my virginity. And that was my first drunk. And it sort of very, very slowly went on from there. I was not a huge drinker until I was about in my late 20s, early 30s, when I started drinking. I've always been a chef, and we've always been allocated so many pints of beer a week. And the last place I worked before I stopped drinking, in a hotel, we was issued 96 cans of beer a week, and half pint cans, so it was 48 pints. And there was so much beer for the chefs, you know, I never run out of beer, and I drank a lot of spirits, and a lot of sherry, and eventually anything, you know, anything with alcohol in it. And the last sort of like, sort of like 7 years of my drinking was bad. I always work split shift, and towards the end of my drinking my wife would go to work, two children would go to school, and I started work at 11 o'clock in the morning. And I'd crack open a bottle of wine and read the newspaper in bed. And I thought that was normal. You know, everybody does that. Because my alcoholic brain was telling me that, and it's quite... Looking back, it was complete insanity. But you should go to work, you should stop in a pub on the way to work, then go to work, drink, come home, fall asleep, go back to work at 6:30, drink and drive home drunk. And that went on for a long, long time. And I hated coming home. And I always remember driving home with all the car windows open, my head hung out, my mouth wide open, hoping that it would take the smell of beer or whatever I was drinking out of it before I got home, so there wouldn't be that usual row with my wife. But, you know, it didn't work, and I'd walk in and the row would start. I'd been drinking again, I'd deny it. And I always remember, and it always makes me quite emotional, having this row and looking up the top of the stairs and see my two children. You know, they're up there weeping because, you know, I never liked rows. And I thought my wife loved them, you know, because she's that sort of vindictive woman. And I'd swear I wouldn't drink the next day, and the next day I would drink. And it went on for a long, long time. And my wife started going to Al-Anon, which is a very good organisation. It's a wonderful organisation. But she stopped looking after me. She stopped making excuses for me. She stopped sleeping with me, you know. I was in a separate bedroom. My kids were going to Alateen. They stopped talking to me. And it was good, you know, for a while it was good because there was no more rows, you know. My wife and children, they'd be in bed when I come home from work. And I didn't drink a lot at home. Now and again, when the wife was out, I might crack a bottle open, but I didn't drink a lot at home. And it was more peaceful, and I'd probably fall asleep in front of the television night after night after night. And my wife used to leave AA literature around. She used to leave alcoholics' telephone numbers around, because she had, you know, she met people in AA whose husbands were in recovery and who wanted to help other alcoholics. But I wouldn't admit I was an alcoholic. But eventually, to do my wife a favour, I phoned Irish Ray up. God bless him. I know he's in Swindon now, but yeah, first alcoholic I met. I went round to see him, and he told me his story, and his story wasn't like mine. You know, Ray was I think he was drinking Pachin when he was about 12 years old. He'd slept rough, he'd done all sorts of things I'd never done. But he persuaded me to go to a Sunday night meeting at Leaving Rood Road. And I expected Ray to be there, and he wasn't. Big resentment there. But I sat down next to a guy called Shaky Pete. And God bless him, he's another wonderful memory of AA for me. And I sat down and he told me his story, and he sort of 12-stepped me. And I went back to that meeting every Sunday night for 3 months, and I stayed dry. God knows how, but I stayed dry. And then I realised I wasn't an alcoholic. I wasn't like you lot. And I went back out drinking. And, you know, a couple of pints at first, and it built up. Until I was back to normal and rapidly getting worse. And my wife was threatening divorce. And I thought, great. She would go, the kids would go, I have a house to myself, I can do whatever I want. But the idea was for me to go, because I was the one with the problem. And I'm absolutely useless on my own. I still am. That's why I keep coming back to these rooms. But, you know, with the idea of divorce coming up to a wife I truly loved, and two children I truly loved, but not loved enough to stop drinking, you know. And I woke up one night in front of the television, you know, and the white dot was glowing, 3 o'clock in the morning, in a moment of clarity. And I looked at my future, and all I could see was the next drink. And, you know, I still had a driving license, I still had a job, I still had a house, I still just about had a family. What I didn't have was, I didn't have me. It was just, all I was the next drink. And for the first time in my life, I just go back a bit. When I was 35, and I knew I had a drink problem, but it was only, I just drank too much. And I got myself confirmed so I could get close contact with God, who would help me stop drinking. And he didn't, you know. We had a confirmation party afterwards, and I got absolutely paralytic. Yeah. And on this particular night, you know, when I woke up, I prayed to God without bargaining, because I always used to bargain with God, you know. And this was a straight, pure prayer that helped me not pick a drink up on the way to work in the morning. And it worked, you know. The compulsion completely left me when I went for about the next 5 or 6 months waiting to pick the drink up. And it didn't happen. And I started going to more meetings. And people used to say, get a sponsor, Tom. And I felt I didn't deserve a sponsor. My self-esteem was so low, it was, you know, it was quite horrible. I used to go to meetings. I used to listen. But I get there at 8 o'clock, I leave at 9:30, and I tried very hard not to get involved, because you wouldn't like me, because I wasn't worth helping. But I knew that I was most comfortable at a meeting, but if I talked to anybody, they wouldn't like me. And anyway, people said, get a sponsor. So I asked this guy, that man over there, Mike, because I used to listen to Miles, because he's a great talker, you know. He's a bloody great talker. And I could very rarely understand what he was talking about. But, and he's not, I only found out later on, well, quite a lot later on, that he's only been sober a couple of months longer than me, you know, which I didn't know then. But I asked him to be my sponsor because he had the sort of, what I was looking for then, the sobriety I wanted. So I asked him, and he said yes. And then I stopped going to the meetings he was going to, because if I sat down and talked to him, he wouldn't like me. And as far as I can remember, I asked him in August, And the next time I really saw him was on Boxing Day in Sunham Woods when he was with the Three Musketeers. And, you know, it's one of those massive coincidences that me walking my dog in Sunham Woods on Boxing Day and meeting Dear Miles was a massive coincidence. And we arranged to meet the following week. And he took me through the steps. And it was hard work, because I don't like change. You know, I was going to the meetings, trying to work the steps. No, I wasn't trying to work, I didn't even look at the steps. But Miles took me through them. And slowly, slowly, it started working. And I always remember, you know, I had this very low self-esteem. He said to me, when you get up in the morning, look in the mirror and say, I love you, Tom. And I thought, what a wanker. You know, I can't do that. That won't work. But I did it. And eventually, I came to love myself. And to love myself, I love my wife, my children, and especially people in the fellowship, you know, because I was frightened of everybody, and I've become to love them. And wonderful people, they've helped me through many things. Because I'm a very slow learner, but I love coming to AA. And I've done everything right. You know, I do the next right thing and I'm okay. I remember a while back, about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, I broke my hip at work. Well, it wasn't at work, I was walking from the car park to the kitchen. And I slipped on the snow and broke my hip. And through me breaking my hip, they discovered I had a tumour on my esophagus. And they called me in to the hospital and said, you know, you've got cancer. Oh, God. I was absolutely blown away. You know, by then I've been sort of like sober 25 years. I've been going to meetings, I've been helping newcomers, I've been doing service. I've been a good little AA boy, and God's given me cancer. And for 3 days I just sat there and it was whizzing around my head. And I looked at step three. And I handed my will and life over to God as I understand him, and a bloody good surgeon. and you know, I'm sat here today, and I saw my surgeon the week before last, because I have regular checkups. And he said to me, "You're a walking miracle." And I know that's not down to me. That's down to the people in the rooms, which, you know, I know a lot of you and I don't know a lot of you, you know, but I feel at home, I feel safe. I know if I go to the meetings, I can go outside and I can live a good life. And I've been blessed with grandchildren. You know, I've been blessed with a wonderful retirement. I absolutely love life. I know that if I get up in the morning, do the next right thing, stay in touch with my higher power, pay my sponsor on quite an irregular basis, because I'm terrible with my mobile phone. It's off most of the time. But I know if I keep coming to the meetings and sitting here with you lot, you know, and I've been terrified for the last 24 hours about today, because I'm not a great sharer. But to me, it's not gone too bad, and I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Well, I didn't know why you were terrified, because that was lovely. Absolutely lovely to hear you. You said, which I really related to, that bit where you said you hadn't actually lost your wife or your children, but you lost you. And I thought that, you know, that just reminded me of the end of my drinking. I did have some things, and I had a family, but I didn't have me. And amazing that and you are terrible with your mobile phone, because I tried ringing you about 5 times, and twice it came on as if you'd answered, and then you didn't answer, and I just heard you chatting to somebody in the background. So, but anyway, in the end, we connected, and I got hold of your wife and things. So that was lovely.